All right, here we go. National Gord.
Love it.
National Hour live on Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver, Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. This hour of Real Kipper and Bourne brought to you by Bet365. Nick Kyprios in for one more day. I'm going to miss you, Gord.
Partying such sweet sorrow, Kipper.
But we have to welcome back Justin Bourne.
I guess.
Wearing his paper bag because he lost his money.
Yeah, he'd be willing to work overtime or anything for a while.
Yeah. Any advertiser, reach out to Justin Bourne coming back from vacation.
And that, of course, is the sound of Sammy McKee, Derek Brandeo, and Jake Schultz as well. In a few minutes, we'll welcome in Dan Murphy, who can give us the latest on the Canucks. And it ain't pretty. It ain't pretty for the Hughes family either. As we saw two respective stars on their team go down once again, Quinn Hughes in Vancouver and Jack Hughes with New Jersey.
Yeah, and the Jack Hughes, I mean, colliding with Jack Eichel, they were just teammates, right? You know, Team USA. And it's interesting, Kipper, New Jersey and Vancouver to me are similar in that they were teams that started the season really strong, were in solid playoff spots, and then to varying degrees had their struggles. Now, the Canucks are more relevant in that, you know, they're technically tied in points with Calgary, vying for that last playoff spot. They got St. Louis nipping at their heels, Utah to a degree nipping at their heels. New Jersey has had a little bit of slippage, you know? Like, I mean, you know, they still got, like, Detroit, Columbus, 7th and 8th, but they're 6th. New Jersey are, and they've been slipping a bit as well. So if, and they fully expect to be in the playoffs the way they play, and you have to think part one is trade deadline wise, if it's a big injury for Jack Hughes, then Tom Fitzgerald's becoming a buyer. He needs to become a buyer. They got to get a decent body in there. Vancouver, they need to get healthy. I mean, they need Quinn Hughes, Demko. They need to get Elias Pettersson moving. I don't know. They've already made a lot of trades. So I don't know what else Patrick Alvin and Jim Rutherford have to stage there. But, yeah, the Hughes brothers not playing are big stories right now, unfortunately.
Would you buy into my theory that the Devils will lose their third spot in the Metro and slide into a wild card while Columbus sneaks in there?
This could be it. This could be the difference maker. If Columbus has great momentum, they got Boone Jenner back. They got Marchenko back. I couldn't believe it. The guy had, like, surgery on his jaw, right? And he only missed 3 games. He had the 2-week break. So, and they got the karma. The Devils had been slipping a little bit, and then you get this kind of injury. So, yeah. I mean, what? Even worse, falling out of the playoffs. That would be catastrophic. But, yeah, I could very much see them sliding into a wild card.
Them sliding into a wild card, setting up the first-round matchup with the Toronto Maple Leafs when they win the division. Sheldon Keefe versus the Leafs in the first round, which I said was going to happen back in October. I will say, biggest news over the weekend, I think, was obviously Seth Jones getting traded to Florida. We talked a little bit about it in our Leafs Hour. Maybe just speak on it again here. I think you liked it for Florida.
I did like it for Florida. I don't think the ask is going to be anywhere near or the weight on his shoulders like it was in Chicago. I think he could slide in there with a bunch of other guys who may have had a similar story, right? Kind of lost and then found themselves in Florida becoming Stanley Cup champions, right?
Well, and leverage-wise, so, you know, you always say, I don't like to be bullied into making a trade, but in Chicago, once he spoke out,
yeah,
that was it. That you had to, right? Because it's he's talking about, he was being honest. He spoke in a very measured manner, but it was time. It was time to part ways. Then you're hurt leverage-wise because he's got a no trade. So I have no idea what 31 other teams would offer, but it was irrelevant. There are only a couple.
Dallas wanted him.
Really?
And they had been in talks, but their offer wasn't as good as Florida's.
Yeah, whether it was to retain more salary, whatever it may be. But you're right. So Florida came up bigger. I'd have to believe in Chicago that you really believe Spencer Knight's going to be your goaltender. I mean, you got, like, so you, poor Peter Mrazek's been out there forever, just, you know, getting beaten up, whatever, and you don't want to put a young goaltender in that scenario. They do have one or two in the system as well. So and Florida's a great landing spot. When you're, hey, remember Larry Murphy going to the Detroit Red Wings when it looked like his career was over and not playing at the level Seth Jones was, but adding to his Hall of Fame career and getting some Stanley Cup rings with the Red Wings as well. So that's an opportunity for Seth Jones.
I as a Leaf fan, This does worry me. I really do think that this is going to work out for the Florida Panthers. I think we said in the first hour, maybe you mentioned, Gordo, that they're trying to find out whether he was, you know, part of the problem or he was the problem or whatever the conversation is there. I think there's too much in terms of raw tools with Seth Jones, in terms of his size, his skating ability, right shot, got the ability to fire it. He can, you know, he can snap a stretch pass. Him going there in that system with those other players, with that pedigree, with Paul Maurice, I have a really hard time picturing it just not working. You know what I mean? Like, it's just one of those teams now where I expect it to work out.
Well, they've been in the final twice. They won the cup last year. They've lost Montour. They've lost Oliver Ekman-Larsson. You know,
for sure.
So they lost some depth, right?
No
so
question. But this, this really adds to their, I think he's like sort of not a Montour replacement necessarily, but kind of the guy that slides into those minutes, same type of money that he made. I just think it's a really good move for the Florida Panthers.
As far as the Winnipeg or Vancouver Canucks are concerned.
Quinn Hughes, man. That's
right?
the biggest
give me a 0 to 10 on the panic right now in Vancouver for their fans anyways.
Yeah, well, Murph will fill us in more, but I would have to think it's like all great hockey markets, which in Canada is all of them, right? About, like the presence of Quinn Hughes is kind of like Brian Leetch was, you know, a different kind of thing. Just he's smaller, but he seems larger, you know, when he comes out and just him being gone. I mean, geez, this stud defenseman, and then Elias Pettersson. Can you get, like, I don't even bring it up anymore because I'm tired of talking about it. I'm baffled by it, but he just hasn't got going. But the stud defenseman. I mean, right now, I would guess Jack Hughes would be out longer than Quinn Hughes, not knowing either. Just it didn't look good what happened going on the boards. But, boy, I wish they were both back.
They can't get Pettersson to shoot the puck.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, forget about points. It's just like, can you get it in that direction?
Well, and even, like, you've dealt with, we've talked many times, and I have no idea, I don't want to start guessing or whatever, but individuals who have had, everyone has issues, and it's affected their play, whatever it may be. He just doesn't, he's always been calm and reserved that way, but it just doesn't seem engaged, right? You know, for whatever reason.
Again, we're going to welcome in Dan Murphy soon, but where do you see Vancouver and Jimmy Rutherford, Patrick Alvin going into this week? Buyers, sellers, or potential placeholders?
Well, you got to leave no stone unturned. So buyers, you know, if they're looking, they've already done buying. And I gave it a thing like when they gave up a first round pick for Philip Roenick, trade deadline, whatever, a year or two ago, that was a nice little piece. So, I mean, I don't think the Miller trade had to be done. That's kind of viewed as a big trade, but I think, you know, they got to leave no stone unturned about whether adding a piece or two.
Yeah, you're right. You're right there. I know they've had a really tough stretch here. Their goal differential is minus 21, but like, at this point, with the teams that you're kind of quote-unquote battling with, like, don't you think the Vancouver Canucks are probably better than the Flames or probably better than the Blues? Like, they're right.
They should be.
They're right there. If you add something, like, I know it's been terrible, and the Vancouver listeners are probably like, shut up, they should sell. But I don't know. If I'm ownership, it's hard to justify it when you're right there.
Okay, let's welcome in Dan Murphy, host of Hockey Night in Canada, Canucks Hockey on Sportsnet. So should Sammy just shut up and...
A lot of people think that.
And Vancouver should just buy because they're so close here to a first round and anything can happen?
Yeah. Some fans are checking out. Some fans are angry. Some fans don't understand how they're in this position where 1 year ago, you know, they were at the top of the division and Pettersson was leading the league in scoring and he just signed a contract extension. But the one thing I'll say is, knowing this management, knowing the way Jim Rutherford is and Patrick Alvin, the general manager, cut from the same cloth, I don't see these guys waving the white flag with a week to go. They are going to do what they can to help this team make the playoffs. They are going to be buyers. They have a ton of cap space. I don't think they'll hit the rental market per se. I think they're probably looking to add a center, a middle 6-4 that could add some punch to the offense. But I don't see this team selling off assets. Perhaps, yes, they do trade Besser to get something in return, a draft pick, and then move that to get the player they're looking for. But just knowing this management group, they're not going to sit idly by or sell. I just don't see it happening.
That seems like a lot of work in a relatively short week right now. We haven't heard anything up until this point, but is there room for Jimmy to maneuver all of this between now and Friday?
Well, I mean, I think since Patrick, since this management group took over and Patrick was named GM, there hasn't been a more active general manager in the National Hockey League. I mean, these guys, they move off mistakes quickly. They made the JT Miller trade and followed that up with the trade with the Penguins to get Pettersson and O'Connor, re-signed those guys right away. Hedel has looked pretty good. So I don't know what is possible. I think they'd like to get like a forward in his 20s that has term left. I think that's the type of player they're looking for. You know, like we've heard in the past, Dylan Cousins or Josh Norris. These types of players, I think, is what they'd prefer to get. Heck, maybe even a Rickard Rakell, who's got a few years left in Pittsburgh. I don't think they want rentals, but I do think they want to get a forward in here to try to help this team. But I would say this, no matter what they do, I think they're probably talking to Quinn Hughes because this is the most important player with this organization. You kind of want to keep him happy. I don't think he'd want anything to do with a rebuild right now. So I think that would be another reason why they're going to try and beef things up to make the playoffs and see what can happen.
So you mentioned names like, say, Dylan Cousins. I mean, those are like kind of real hockey trades. Any chance Elias Pettersson's traded?
I mean, I would never say never, but I only think that his value has diminished since, you know, the night that Rantanen went to Carolina and it seemed like they were just as close to making the trade for Pettersson. I think this guy has to be built back up. I don't know what the market would be for him. I think at the start of the season, you would have had a really robust market. I don't know how many teams could handle the contract now and if they just view him as too much of a project. I think the plan is to keep him right now. I know there's no trade doesn't kick in until July 1st. But, I mean, I just don't think with the asset being this distressed, I don't think that they're just willing to – I mean, I guess they could look at like what the Kings did with Dubois last year. What was it, Kemper they got back? Maybe something like that. But I don't see them doing that before the deadline. That's more something in the summer.
How much pressure would a Jimmy Rutherford be feeling from ownership, Aquilini family, to not lose the playoffs? And if that's the case, then Murph, does Brock Besser have a chance to be that guy that they just rent their own player and hope that a deal can be worked out at some point in the off season?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm not like the insider like the other guys. I've heard the stuff about a 5-year contract being offered. I think Besser in his camp would like, you know, 6, 7, and, you know, 8, because he can get that in Vancouver. I don't think that that is going to happen. So is there still a few days of, you know, chicken to be played here between these two groups? Maybe, but certainly they could hang on to him. You know, I think his play has dipped since the JT Miller trade. They were a really good tandem together. I think that the noise does affect Brock a little bit. He's said that before, that it can seep into his game. It seems like we're talking about him every year at this time. He's the longest tenured Canuck. He has scored at a pretty good clip since becoming a Vancouver Canuck. But, you know, I could see them hanging on to him and just using him to see if they can get the playoffs. And, you know, I guess chance losing him for nothing in the offseason. But I wouldn't blame Brock either. Like, I wouldn't want to leave 2 years on the table at $15 million total at the end of my career or near the end of my career either. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens because he is a player that the market loves as a person. But I also know that a lot of the market doesn't want to see the Canucks go to 8 years or 7 years with this player at this point.
So, Dan, we're just talking about, you know, in Jack Hughes' case in New Jersey, if he's out like we think, Tom Fitzgerald, all of a sudden, it's got to be a buyer to try to get something comparable, even a rental. So I'm curious. I know injuries, there's never complete disclosure or clarity, but what is the sense about Quinn Hughes and Thatcher Demko as far as their status goes?
Well, I can't say. I mean, Demko, I think, has skated 3 times now. He didn't travel with the team on the last road trip, which was a disaster of a trip, 1-4 on that one. You know that Quinn missed 6, came back for 2, and then couldn't play the final 10 minutes in Seattle. And the head coach said yesterday he's tweaked something, and it's not related to the injury that caused him to miss those 6 games. They're hoping he will practice tomorrow. They had a day off today. They're hoping he'll practice tomorrow. But let's be honest here. I mean, they were just starting to ramp him back up to get back into, you know, the form we saw him at the start of the year and middle of the year. And then he goes out again by tweaking something. I mean, I just don't know how much stress you can put on this guy. He seems to be carrying the team by himself when he's out there. As for Demko, the fact that he's skating is good, but, you know, you feel bad for the guy. But this year, it's been a lot of stops and starts. It's been one step forward, two steps back. And if I was him, seeing now that Lankin has signed that contract, if I was him, I'd make sure I was 100% healthy by the time I came back. And I'm not saying he's come back before he was 100% before, but he should absolutely make sure he's 100% before he comes back again for this team this season.
As far as the blue line is concerned here, without Quinn Hughes, how do you picture it without any significant change on the back end?
Well, I mean, I guess they got to go with what they have right now. I think that if they are going to make a trade, Soucy is the name that you see potentially being moved out to free up some salary. They really like what this Elias Pettersson has brought. They haven't taken him out of the lineup. It's kind of been more, I mean, Juleson's now gone for the season. Hernia surgery. So I guess they'll go with what they have. We've only seen Victor Mancini one time. So they do have some options on defense. And I will say this, like, I mean, Tyler Myers, he's had his moments where he's taken heat in this market. He has been excellent again recently for this team. So I just, you know, you're going up now. It's not just them in Calgary. It's Utah and St. Louis as well. And if you have to go another stretch here without Quinn Hughes or with a Quinn Hughes at 70%, this club's going to be in tough, but considering the way they've had problems scoring. Unless they can somehow add some scoring pop, it's going to be a real fight to the finish line with Hughes or without. But without him, I mean, man, that might just be too steep a hill to climb.
You kind of mentioned it, that it seemed like a nice, tidy nine-team battle for eight spots for a long, long time. And now St. Louis very much in the picture. And just, you know, obviously, if you're Vancouver, just go win your games, okay? Take care of it that way. But how do you handicap the Calgary Flames and the St. Louis Blues teams at the three-quarter pole now?
Well, I'll say this. I mean, we just saw Salt Lake. And, man, they have some dynamic young forwards that seem to be starting to elevate their games. The Genthers, of course, Keller, Cooley. So I like them as a team on the rise. St. Louis, I mean, maybe the Binnington bump. They definitely have some experience in that room. And maybe right now, Army is saying, listen, you guys have to blow the doors off me with an offer for Parayko or for Shen, because I got a shot at making the playoffs here, and I have a goaltender that's done it before who's very confident after the Four Nations. So I would say, if I'm handicapping it, I like St. Louis better than Calgary, and I probably like St. Louis a little bit better than Utah too. But, I mean, Dustin Wolf's been all world. But they seem to be kind of in the situation Vancouver is Calgary. They're having trouble scoring.
Murph, let me ask you about Rick Tocchet and his future and the level of maybe frustration trying to balance this whole season out, and where you think he is short-term or long-term for this organization.
Well, I mean, I'll say short-term. I think you're right. He's probably at his wit's end a little bit. It has been one heck of a season, from, you know, cancer diagnoses to personal leaves to infighting to injuries to your top players to trying to get guys going. So I would think probably he's had easier years. Like, he spoke yesterday after the skate, and although he wasn't specifically asked about Pettersson, he just asked about what he needs to see more from guys. And all the things that he said, he was probably speaking directly to Pettersson with the ones he was saying. So I think he's had a tough year, a frustrating year. You know, there is another year team option. You know, and I don't think, you know, Tocchet's a quitter. You know, I think he still likes this job, likes this market. I don't know what else might come up out there. Boston, is that a better situation? If Sacco is not going to be around, he's just an intern. So I have a tough time saying what will happen beyond this year. But, man, when this year's done, I hope that Rick has himself a good quiet couple of weeks because he's deserved it. If he had hair, it would have been pulled out by now, and he'd look the way he does.
You alluded to the fans earlier, so I'm just, you know, so the overall, my hey, all Canadian-based ones, big cities are tough markets, and I'm just I'm curious, like, where the fans are, how they're split. I mean, is there optimism? Are they fed up? Like, what, you know, because, man, last year, talk about riding high with the playoff success, yeah. And then to start the season that way, and then to be in this kind of predicament that seemingly there's no end of right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some frustration with the fan base as well, just because there was hope, Gord, going into this year. Like, there was legitimate hope. I think only Edmonton and maybe Colorado had better odds, like, to make it to the Cup final at the start of the season, so the betting markets were even on them. And just with everything that happened, some of it's unforeseen, of course. But, of course, when it was Miller versus Pettersson, the market was split. Some people were Team Miller, some were Team Pettersson. So you pissed off half the fan base there when you made that one trade. And now it kind of seems it's gone to Team Pettersson versus Team Tocchet, that you know, can't coach the offense because the team can't score. So not only was there some infighting with the team, there's been infighting with the fan base. And it, you know, wasn't that way 12 months ago because everything was going right. This year just seems like everything has gone wrong.
It almost seems now in 2025 that there are challenges for every Canadian market, probably led by taxes more than anything else for potential players to be traded to a Canadian club. But do you think with everything that's gone on in Vancouver that many guys would be nervous to go into that scenario right now?
I don't know. It's a good question. I mean, I still think the city is desirable, but you're right. I mean, the tax situation. I mean, the one thing that I ever hear, though, when people talk about, like, getting taxed more in a Canadian market, it's true, but you're also living in a Canadian city getting paid with American dollars.
Big time.
So, you know, your money's going a lot further in that, whether you're renting or if you bought or something like that. I mean, your money's going a lot further. So I always kind of weigh those things out as even. You know, I think players will go to a team that wins, that has a chance to win, that they like the coach. And these are all things that, you know, the Canucks had going for them in the summer. This year, not as much. But I always think that if the situation on the ice is good, you're going to get players, right? I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, people want to play in Edmonton right now. I'm nothing against Edmonton, but before they were winning, McDavid was there. Not a lot of guys did. So I just think that if they can somehow turn things around on the ice, that won't be a problem. If they can't, there's going to be some issues.
Well, it won't help you, but our daughter moved to Vancouver a month ago, but she doesn't play in the NHL, so sorry. But so she's liking it out there. Now, give me a one or two good stories, like one or two that, you know what, we're at the 60-game mark, and this has been, whether it's a pleasant surprise or just beyond Quinn Hughes, obviously, or just, you know, a solid, solid performance.
Well, I mean, Quinn Hughes is the obvious one. I mean, I think he probably could have been before these injuries in the Hart Trophy conversation, just because with him on the ice, they were a top three team. Without him, they're a bottom three team. So that was one. I still think DeBrusque has been a good story. He's on a career, you know, a path for career high goals. He's been the streaky guy we've seen. And you know what? I gotta throw some flowers to Connor Garland. I just think that he, day in, day out, he competes. He plays much bigger than his size. He's consistently a play driver. So I think Garland has been a good story for this team, too. And then if you're looking at the young player, like Elias Pettersson, he went in the lineup and he has not come out. And Rick Tocchet does not want to pull him out. So I think that that's a positive story, too. And then if you look with Tom Vilander maybe coming before this season's over, who knows? But you know, as opposed to last year, there's fewer good stories, but there are still some pretty good ones. And the fact that they've gone through all this, and like we've talked about before, Joshua cancer, Forbert leaving, his father died, Besser month gone concussion, Miller absence, Hronek hurt, you know, Hughes hurt again, Demko hurt. Through all that, they're still right there in a playoff spot. So I think that they have a chance to put a lot of garbage behind them with a good 20 games here. And I think that that would do a lot for the players in that locker room, even if they lost first round in, you know, not so dramatic fashion to Winnipeg. I think it would do a lot for those guys in the room just to come out the other end and say we had maybe the most difficult year ever, and yet we still found a way to make it in the playoffs. So I think that's really a good goal for the players on the ice as well.
It's going to be a fascinating finish here to the trade deadline. I tell you what, it's never a dull moment out there, is it, Murph?
No. I've been hardened by the last decade. I'll give you that. 15 years.
Somehow I think you guys wouldn't have it any other way.
First 10 years were gravy. West Coast Express, the Twins, Solongo.
Hang in there, Murph. Hang in there, buddy. Really appreciate it. Thanks for doing this.
All right. Take care.
So.
Love that guy.
Now you got the Winnipeg Jets who, like.
Never lose.
Never lose. But, like almost like a perfect season right now. They need to talk. Maybe just a little controversy.
Well,
do we need controversy out of Winnipeg to talk to them, Gord?
Well, it wouldn't hurt. I mean, the two last perfect seasons, the Boston Bruins a couple of years ago and the Tampa Bay Lightning when they played Columbus in the first rounds, that they were first-round exits. So, I don't know. You need a little bit. Like you guys looking for your phone charger earlier. You know, something. Some bite.
What does that say about our society that we're not talking about Winnipeg, but we like to talk about, like, the fire sale or the, you know, thing like it world's blowing up, Gord. What does that say about us?
Well, I think it's more the sports analogy stuff because everyone, if you're a fan, you're a GM of all of the teams you're a fan about. So if things are going well, you just sit back, enjoy it. You still say, geez, we haven't done it in the playoffs. Like Winnipeg, Carolina, Toronto are three teams that have never had recent history, haven't matched up playoff success to regular season success, whereas teams like Florida have and whatever. But, yeah, I don't know, whatever. It's like used to be about when it bleeds, it leads was the kind of story for tabloid magazines and, you know, whatever. And basically we like the trade rumors, the salacious stories. What's going on there? Why are these guys not getting along, you know?
Sort of like your wife, Lisa, she's attracted to the bad boys.
That's well.
Right? You're a bad boy, Gord.
Listen, as a city News 680 alum here, working for 2 years, if it bleeds, it leads. Like it's the way it goes. But here, if we're gonna do, our new favorite segment, Kipper, is Jets talk, and if we're gonna do some Jets talk. They are 42-15-4, 88 points in 61 games so far this year, plus 71, 23-5-4 at home this year, 19-10-0 away from home. Unbelievable season.
Nathan MacKinnon scored on Connor Hellebuck in the championship game, the Four Nations.
Negative in Jets talk. Yeah. Only positive.
Well,
only positive.
By the way, what gang?
Hellebuck he has to win four rounds. But that's the only thing left.
They're going to get the worst team in the West in the playoffs, right? In years past, they've been in that 2-3 matchup where they've had to go up against the Avs last year and all these other. It's much like the Leafs. Get an easier first-round matchup. Let Connor Hellebuck get his legs under him in some big games and go from there. I do have a good feeling about the Jets this year. I really do.
What gang would I belong to, Kipper, as a bad boy? It wouldn't be a very good one. It wouldn't be a very tough one.
Give me the commercial break, and I'll remember a few Happy Days gangs that's Potsy and Ralph.
Yeah, whatever the ones that come in with the windbreakers. To Arnold's.
Let's do game time quickly before we go to break. It was game time presented by Bet365. Visit the app for the odds and find out why it's ever ordinary at Bet365. It's 19 plus, Ontario only. Please play responsibly. I was looking at the Leafs game tonight. Leafs are huge favorites on home ice, as you would imagine. But I forgot that there is a returning player for the San Jose Sharks.
The lily pad.
Timothy Liljegren making his triumphant return to Scotiabank Arena with all those amazing memories that he has made with the Toronto Maple Leafs. And as all Leaf fans know listening to this, there is nothing like a returning sort of fringe player. There is no power they have like scoring against the Leafs when they return. So I am going to test those powers with a Timothy Liljegren goal tonight at plus 1,400. There has been a million guys that have come back against the Leafs and scored a goal against them when they used to play for them. So I am testing the limits of that by picking a Timothy Liljegren goal against the Toronto Maple Leafs tonight. Thoughts?
What's going to be on his video?
I hope they'll give him a longer. Exclude some bad pinches.
Okay, that's right.
So they're going to give Timothy Liljegren a longer return video than they did for Mitch Marner for setting up the winning goal for Team Canada in the Four Nations faceoff. That's great. Anyways, moving on.
Ouch.
Excellent game tonight in Florida. The Tampa Bay Lightning in Florida to take, well, they're always in Florida, but they're in Sunrise to take on the Florida Panthers. They are underdogs against the Panthers, plus 135. The Florida Panthers, minus 160. So a really good matchup there, and Sens desperate for a win in the Washington take on the Capitals. We'll talk about this a little bit after the break, but Ovi only 10 away now from breaking the all-time goal-scoring record. Unbelievable. Anyways, that was Game Time presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus, Ontario only. Please play responsibly.
Okay, we'll take a quick break, and when we return, we'll get into the latest I have on Sportsnet.ca, updated list of who may stay, who may go, moving target. You would have thought by now, Gord, the buyers and the sellers would be well established. Might not be the case just yet.
Changed on the weekend, yeah.
Changed on the weekend. We'll get into that and more. Brad Marchand, staying or going in Boston? We discuss next when we return to Real Kipper and Bourne.
Everything you need to know about the Raptors and the biggest stories around the NBA. Smith and Jones. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nick Kiprios. Gord Stellick.
Last time, Kipper.
Last hurrah. Sammy McKee.
Closing time.
As a reminder, this hour of Real Kipper and Bourne brought to you by Bet365. So, Gord, we're going to get into maybe a little discussion on the Boston Bruins, but I want to lean a little bit towards your stint as a general manager for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and you were part of some trades, and just the whole, what are general managers feeling today going into Friday, and how much pressure they may have on improving the team or making a big splash or getting into a playoff scenario. You know, take us back to your days with some of the trades that you made and maybe some of the pressures that you felt to make them.
Yeah, and so a couple of years with New York, mostly with Toronto, right? And only 2 years in Toronto being in the big chair, but a part of it before and other things. And again, the one good thing, and even before a cap era, I always talk about Ken Reggett in the sense that he was wanted by Bobby Clark in Philadelphia, Jerry Meehan in Buffalo, and David Poile in Washington. So that's what you want when you're taught. So it ends up being an ongoing dialogue that, okay, you know you got a couple of suitors. In that case, we're going to make the trade. The suitors know that you're not BSing them because quite often there's elements of poker that go into it as well. So that was one neat part about the whole negotiation process to try to get the best deal, probably like Chicago tried to do with Seth Jones, right?
Was the Reggett a trade deadline deal?
Yeah, 2 first-round picks.
Yep.
So anyway, but the other part, you know, 21 general managers back then. There's 32 now, but there's still things that, about being human. There's still some that are gunslingers. I think Jim Rutherford's one. They're still like, you know, they like to kind of, you know, just, you know, kind of said, yeah, I like it. I know Patrick Alvin's the general manager, but I mean, you know, that attitude. There is pressure from owners as well. I don't know how – I'll use Boston as example. Again, I have no idea behind the scenes, and Cam Neely's certainly a very – pressure from a president as well, whatever, about, you know, hey, are you doing something? And quite often, general managers might feel that kind of pressure. Then there's others about, am I sending a message in the dressing room, you know? Like, they're going to receive this player well, or, you know, it will disrupt the chemistry. What's going – you know, so you're looking at all those different kind of components. And then you also, Nick, what's happened is – you've got a lot of balls out there, and you have to start bringing them in a bit, okay? You got to start bringing them in a bit, so you can't be talking 12 prospective deals. And then all of a sudden, bing, one still might happen from left field. Like all of a sudden, well, Tom Fitzgerald in New Jersey now, if Jack Hughes is injured. All of a sudden, he's on the phone. So, and it's funny, I talked to a couple of general managers, current ones as well, because I wondered how much. You got way more people now, way more people. But still, they said, no, still one-on-one when we're talking, you know, because stuff gets out there and that.
Mm-hmm.
Even though that can be unwieldy, like it's hard, it was hard to talk to 20 other general managers. It's hard to talk to 31 others as far as, you know, so it's So it's an, there's time management that comes into play. But it's exciting, Kipper. It's exciting. Yeah. It's neat. You're like, it's all consuming, just like the fans are. And people see you and they talk, geez, what are you going to do and all that. And it's a, it's like in no other sport. Like no other sport has the same vibe or energy around the trade deadline, whether you're working for a team or in the media or being a fan.
The one I want to ask you, and I'm not even sure if it was a trade deadline, but I know you get asked a lot about Courtnell for John Kordick.
Yeah, yeah.
Just in terms of you willing to give up a skilled player to get that type of toughness, how bad was it for the Leafs that you felt like you needed to get a tough guy in there? Were they getting their asses whipped every night? Like, the pressure that you needed to get them some reinforcements, how bad was that back then?
So that trade was in early November.
Okay.
And also my reality was I had a coach that I inherited in John Brophy, yes, who I really liked quite a bit. So he valued John Kordick from the 1986 when Kordick played a significant role in the playoffs, especially, and Brophy had been in the Montreal organization. So anyway, he and Russ Courtnell didn't get along. And when Russ was a healthy scratch a couple of games, I kind of said to Russ, look, just I'll try to help move you somewhere. Okay, this is going to be my one casualty. I already had a few I was able to save, like Borja Sáming, for example, whatever. So I made the trade in a big way based on the coach. And that was an inexperienced move by me. Okay, that was an inexperienced move. But I take some solace that I didn't grease the skids for Brof. Now, I should have learned from an unpopular trade when Punch Imlach traded Lanny McDonald. He sent him to the Colorado Rockies, so you never saw him, right? You saw Russ Courtnell every Saturday, Montreal Canadiens kicking, yeah, someone's ass, whatever, as you went back up to your office. And so, but I hadn't made the trade that way. I got the coach, the player in question. The player, we didn't have a lot of pre-scouting to know the player had some bigger issues around it. So it's sort of taken a life of its own because there was Kordick wearing the dark hat, Russ Courtnell wearing the white hat. And it wasn't that simple. John Kordick, you talked to Cam Neely, played with him in Portland. I remember when he was getting inducted in the Hockey Hall of Fame, and I used to sort of host those that kind of weekend. And he spoke extensively and passionately about playing with him in Portland and what a good player he was and all those things.
Do you think, just one more thing on this, do you think that's going on as we speak today where it's maybe the experienced ones, the Coopers, Berube in Toronto, they are going, get me this guy, get me that guy. And again, the pressure that a general manager could feel now to appease.
Yeah, well, exactly. And the thing, you know, Doug McLean has a funny line. He tells other GMs, stay close to the owner because they'll turn on the coach, okay? But if the owner loves the coach, then all of a sudden, and Pat Burns pushed on Cliff Fletcher. And Cliff was a serious general manager experience. No, Pat Burns worked the phones a little bit talking to Pierre Lacroix about something, you know, yeah, whatever, technically tampering behind the scenes. He wanted to get Mike Ricci, right? A trade deadline, right? Whatever. And so stuff like that happened. I don't know how prevalent it is nowadays, but there have to be some, like John Cooper would be a great example. But I think also that's a winning organization. So they're in harmony about things. Like, when you're a losing organization that was losing, you're sort of grasping at things, trying to fix things. When you've developed a cohesive group together, LA has a real cohesive group. You know that, and that's how you win, and that's how you kind of ride it, like the Jays did for a number of years way back when.
So if you're Doug Armstrong, for example, and you have Braden Schenn right now, like how many teams do you think Kipper are calling on Braden Schenn? Like, do you think he's fielding daily?
Yes, I do. I do. And I think any team that's interested in a centerman,
yeah,
would have to make that call. That's your job.
So if you're, yeah, I mean, so to your point, when you're talking about this Reggett trade where you have all these people calling you three different teams, like, that must be such an incredible, you don't want to trade your captain at all, like, especially because you're in a playoff race.
Yeah.
But, like, to be sitting there with, at the deadline, with what everyone thinks is sort of the prize of the deadline, you could really set up the future of your franchise here for a couple years with the right move. And if you have multiple teams, that's got to be exciting for a general manager.
Well, and, really does. And again, the cap wasn't a problem back then. Yeah. But I'll tell you, Sammy and Kipper, what I'm sure is the same now that was back then. So when you talk to the other 20 general managers, just like now, if you're talking to other 31, so you're calling Nick Kiprios, you know, you just would check in, right? How's it going? How's the family? Blah, blah, blah. You know, a bit of a slump, but we're getting going now. You go, you like anybody on our team? Who do you like on our team? Before you said goodbye, and I'll tell you, you know, who you're interested in my team. And this would be in October, November, December, January. Like always, there'd be just that kind of thing you'd leave after meeting one of the other general managers with a sense that, okay, you know, they like a guy we have down in the American Hockey League. They like Sammy, whatever it may be. They could need a left shot defenseman. So, okay, store, you know, right, whatever. So you got all this stuff. Like, that's the big master plan. And then, like I said, as it goes on, then sometimes all of a sudden, hey, this team's struggling a bit. I'm going to call Nick Kiprios. You know, they're 0-5-2 in their last seven, whatever. I'm going
to see if they're ready to make a decision here of some
kind. Like Serge Savard called me. Whatever, basically, and just, you know, yeah. Kind of like they're
it's interesting.
Just feeling the pressure.
When you say Jimmy Rutherford, that he's like, you know, he'll pull the trigger, right?
Yeah, gunslinger. Like, Cliff was a gunslinger back in the, you know, there are certain GMs.
But there's others that need that build up, right? Maybe from October, November to March. Maybe they just need reinforcement. They got to hear from their scout. They got to hear from, you know, the
David
concession
Boyle
stand.
It was methodical.
Popcorn guy. He can't do it on his own. He needs...
Cheveld Dayoff has got the reputation of being methodical as well. Like, he's not a big gunslinger.
Brett Tree living in Toronto makes tons of calls, but doesn't have the reputation of being that guy right now.
I'll tell you one that was off the charts. I don't know who the comparable would be now. Phil Esposito, when he was running the New York Rangers. So he would say, so there wasn't a fit. They go, who do you like? Who do you like elsewhere? And actually, a guy I liked was Bob Rouse, and he was playing with Minnesota. And actually, Toronto got him later on after I was gone. Like, you know, hey, I want to do a three-way. What do you want? I'll talk to Louis Nanny, and then we'll try. Like, I can't even follow everything, whatever. Any player, any other player, Phil was thinking on the other level about, okay, we'll get a three-way trade. We'll figure it out. I'll work out something with Minnesota. Anyway, it didn't come to fruition, but he would just talk about a gunslinger. He would just come at him. What was called Trader Phil, right?
Yeah.
You know, and that would you know, come on that. Okay. What about Gretzky? You can shake him loose from Edmonton or Los Angeles and maybe get him our way.
You mentioned going back to the coaches and players. Forgot about this. It just came to my mind. But we literally had Craig Berube 3 days ago or 4 days ago. Was that Friday or Thursday? Being like, oh, I love the player. Oh, you know, he's just a great guy. And he went on for 4 or 5.
Yeah.
So I bet you that would be constitute as a coach saying something that maybe a general manager would hear and would happen like a week ago.
Well, and Doug Armstrong would work that. He would know. But, of course, Brad Treliving's been around, you know, for a while. Brad Treliving handled a very difficult situation, all that happened in Calgary, right? And now this year you're seeing with Huberdeau coming around, you know, he really made the best of it. But, yeah, certainly – Doug goes, yep, Ruby likes this guy. Likes this guy. And Brad knows the coach likes this guy. So it'll factor a little bit.
Can Don Sweeney make the best of it right now, knowing that he's still very much looking at a potential situation where if the team gets on a decent run, they can make the playoffs. But where are they going past that? And is this the time to collect assets? So does he stay with trying to convince Brad Marchand to possibly go to Colorado?
Well, go somewhere, and then we can re-sign you in the summer.
Yes.
Which you can do now because you're not tampering. He's your property. You can say, and you'll come back to a stronger team because we'll get a future.
You think Brad owes that to the Boston Bruins?
No, Matt Sundin went through that in Toronto, right? And Sidney Crosby's going through that in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. That hurt Matt's.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I still have friends that talk about that.
Yeah.
What did they name them? The Muskoka?
The Muskoka Five.
Yeah.
But he was just one of them. There were five that had the no trades. I don't even think he was in Muskoka. He went home to Sweden. He got a bad rap. But so that's why I think it's been handled well in Boston. But the other point, Nick, they're 2 points out, and they got all this history. Like, there's something special, and it still is there. I know they've lost Bergeron and Chara and that, but they're still in
element. They've lost Lindholm and McAvoy this year.
Well, McAvoy too, but they've won with those other guys, you know, that culture thing. And even like, you know, like that, so who knows? And Swayman gets going, you're 2 points out. I know that's crowded there, but, you know, you've felt the pressure that can Columbus and Detroit withstand that pressure. You know, like Detroit's always come back to the pack. Maybe this is the year they both go through. So anyways, a lot of arrows, but I still think if you're Boston and even the New York Rangers, you're still thinking we expected to be in the playoffs. And as of today, they're still just 2 points out.
I think it's interesting you mentioned the trade to Colorado or trade somewhere else and then go back. You know, that doesn't happen a ton. And I think I would be very wary, especially of maybe Colorado, going there, playing with McKinnon, being on that team, being in that environment. It's like, yeah, he's like, yeah, I'll sign back in Boston in the summer. For sure, Don. And then he plays for, you know, however many months there, goes to the final or something, you know, God forbid wins the cup. He's like, yeah, you know, this is pretty fun. I think I might stay here. I enjoy this a lot.
He's not unfamiliar with the area. I think he's owned a home, if really? I'm not mistaken.
Didn't know that.
In Colorado.
Didn't know that.
Oh.
Big time hunter, right?
So hunter.
He hunts out there.
Really?
And
he hunts guys' knees on the ice, too. So
he's trained with the altitude out there.
Huh. And doesn't Sydney, like Sydney's trainer goes out there, right? They go there, too. So that's why they talk. Okay, I'm going to tell you one call.
Get
funny.
Nova Scotia 3 together.
So it wasn't a, I don't know if it was a trade deadline call or not, but Lou Lamoriello was the general manager of the New Jersey Devils. So you talk about someone who does things, and this is, he's new. Like I always kid about it. We started at the same time. He lasted 30 years longer, okay, as a general manager. So
by a whisker.
But whatever. You know, I had other things to do. So anyway, he called me. Gordy, we got a situation here. We might have to do something with the player. Hold on, I'm gonna close my office door. Close the office door. And I'm not going to say the player's name, but the player was like, talk about fringe. I almost had to find, like, where is this? I don't even know what this, like, the player had played most of the year in the American Hockey League.
Yeah.
But as he goes to close the door, I'm going, Ken Danico or something like that, you know, like, what, you know, like, whatever. Anyway, and actually, I looked later on, this player did mysteriously just kind of disappear from hockey. But I just, you know.
He's the original Robidoux Island, wherever he went.
Talk about, that's where Lunch Bag Letdown came from.
Part of the sales job, right?
Yes, yes.
Come on, it's selling a car.
And one time, like, there weren't cell phones back then. We talked about somebody. I was away in the afternoon. He couldn't get me. And then all of a sudden, I look, and he's in the press box. He couldn't get me, so he flew to Toronto to scout the game. So, you know, no wonder they won, right? No wonder they build a winning organization. There, all of a sudden, he goes,
He also fired a coach, went down and he also fired a coach and then went down himself. So,
yeah, but they won.
Yeah.
You know, they developed a winning culture there. I got a lot of time and a lot of respect, just to be clear.
A lot of people, especially with his work ethic, his commitment. The guy's been
still doing it.
It's his life, right?
Well, and like him and Brian Burke.
He's a lifer.
Him and Brian Burke are the two guys, when you get kicked in the onions, they're among the first calls.
Yeah.
Now, Burke stays with you, right? I mean, whatever. But that stuff, like, it's easy when you're riding high. But when there's been some adversity dealt your way, all of a sudden, no one's returning your calls. You know, it's a very different world. And so you appreciate the ones that are quick.
Yeah.
And he is among those.
You think he's a seller, Lou, this week?
Boy,
Nelson.
Yeah. I mean, what else can they buy? They got the coach last year. They did Bo Horvat. I mean, they seem to have some of the, like, they had a lot of pieces that expiring contracts, and they stayed, like Anders Lee and all those. But it seems there's too much sameness to me with the New York Islanders.
Five points back with five teams in front of them.
Not jumping that many teams.
That's tough.
Yeah.
Gord, fabulous week with you, man.
Thanks,
really
guys.
Really appreciate it.
I'll do the extended clap.
You do a
round of applause.
You know, this comes above your work at the NHL Network.
NHL Network Radio,
which is,
NHL Morning Skate.
Morning Skate, which I think I might be scheduled on.
Yeah, you are.
Tomorrow morning.
Well, we said, who is the guy who's on top of the trades now? You got the trades boards going. You're the guy, the trade tracker. So we appreciate landing you as a guest.
We're not breaking up anytime soon, Gord.
Okay.
Okay.
We keep trying to, but we keep, you know. We're like Simon and Garfunkel. We're kind of like the hockey version of that.
So Sammy and I are looking forward to Justin Bourne coming back with multiple Mickey Mouse stories, right?
Yeah, wearing his rags because that's all he can afford after going to Disneyland.
All right, once again, our thanks to Gord Stellick this week. Justin Bourne returns tomorrow. Have a great night, everybody.